Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Pistons. This is Matt Shook, your host, and this is the podcast episode for Friday, November 3rd. The Pistons are back in action tonight at Little Caesars Arena to take on the Milwaukee Bucks. And we have an interview with Frank Madden, the host of Locked On Bucks, who's been connected to that team for a long time. It's an interesting team, not only from the perspective of having Giannis, one of the most interesting young players in the NBA, but they're also linked to the Pistons in a variety of ways, and we'll talk to Frank about that in the interview that we did with him. There's also a bit of news about the Detroit MLS bid, and we'll get to that later. The Pistons are involved in that as owner Tom Gores is trying to team up with Dan Gilbert and another entity now to bring a team to downtown Detroit for Major League Soccer. But first, we're going to talk about the bit of trade rumor news that came out on Thursday throughout the day. Eric Bledsoe of the Phoenix Suns, a dynamic athletic guard who's 27 years old and has had a bit of injury history, was linked in trade rumors yesterday on Thursday with the Pistons' own 27-year-old guard who's had a bit of injury history throughout his career, and that, of course, is Reggie Jackson. So Bledsoe, a couple weeks back, had his role reduced in the Phoenix Suns as they're going with the youth movement, and tweeted out the infamous "I don't want to be here" tweet, and sounds like the Phoenix Suns are going to oblige on that and trade him before he plays ever again with the team. So there's rumors all over the place. All the sorts of fan bases are putting together trade machine updates on how to land Bledsoe if they want to land Bledsoe. So that kicked into high gear in the Pistons world yesterday as Basketball Insiders actually reported that the Pistons had offered Reggie Jackson and a first-round pick to acquire Bledsoe. Later on in the day, it was reported by Sports Illustrated that it was actually a three-team deal. And yes, that was what was offered, but Reggie Jackson would be going to the Pelicans in that deal. They would be shedding some contracts, and the Pistons would be throwing that first-round pick to Phoenix and ending up with Bledsoe at the end of the deal. So the Sports Illustrated report also did say that the deal was dead at this point, which is kind of something I tend to believe because, as we know with Stan Van Gundy's trades over the past couple of years, first of all, they've all worked out pretty well. Second of all, you don't really hear a lot of rumors about them. The Pistons seem to do a pretty good job of keeping the lid on things if they're going to be possibly happening. And that probably goes along with the fact that Stan Van Gundy's kind of the man making the moves. Now, that's a positive as far as Stan Van Gundy's trade situation. There's also negatives involved with that. There's something to be said for the fact that you want maybe some separation between your coaching staff and your front office staff. So it's pretty solid evidence out there right now that Reggie Jackson was offered to the Phoenix Suns, along with a first-round pick, another valuable asset for Eric Bledsoe. The problem with that is, and there's trade rumors, this is professional sports, this is something that happens. However, there's something to be said for the fact that Reggie Jackson, as we all know, is an emotional guy, and basically the emotional leader of this team, and maybe Andre Drummond's best friend. This is the person that we're kind of pinning the franchise's hopes on right now. When Reggie Jackson finds out through Twitter or however he finds out on Thursday or maybe early Friday that he's been offered, along with another asset for a point guard that he probably thinks he's just as good at, maybe even thinks he's better at, and that we like that confidence out of Reggie Jackson, what does he think about Stan Van Gundy? What does he look at his coach in the eye and think about what he thinks that his value is? Does he think his coach really believes in him? And I know, like I said, this is a business. This is professional sports. And Stan Van Gundy has a job to coach this team, and he also has a job to make trades. But I just wonder about, especially a guy like Reggie Jackson, who's so emotional, that this doesn't cause a little bit of detriment, especially when Reggie's trying to come back from the worst season in his career. He had the knee tendonitis last year and still has it ongoing, but looks to be pretty well recovered and looking more like the Reggie Jackson from 2 years ago than the player he was a year ago. So I just wonder, going forward, what's in Reggie Jackson's mind as he listens to Stan Van Gundy throughout a game, as he sits on the bench maybe a little bit more than he wants to, as Ish Smith plays well. It's just a dynamic that other teams that don't have this front office slash coach situation don't have to deal with. A lot of times coaches can just say, well, that's what management's working on and I have nothing to do with it. I believe in you. I want you to go out there and play with confidence. And that's kind of the one of the reasons why teams are starting to go away from that model of having the head coach make front office decisions. The San Antonio Spurs do it, and Greg Popovich is pretty much in charge of front office moves, although R.C. Buford is a strong general manager as well. That's a unique situation over there. We've seen in the past offseason that the Atlanta Hawks have taken away Mike Budenholzer's front office responsibilities, and the L.A. Clippers have taken away Doc Rivers' front office responsibilities. So it's a trend that's kind of going away. The Pistons and the Minnesota Timberwolves and with Tom Thibodeau and the San Antonio Spurs are kind of the last remaining ones. And I wonder going forward if Detroit and Minnesota and maybe even possibly San Antonio take a look at this situation down the road and join the others as far as separating that coaching staff and front office going forward. It's just another situation where maybe it's not the right move for them to do. As far as the proposed trade of a first-round pick and Reggie Jackson going and Eric Bledsoe coming in, you know what? I actually would like that. I think it's a good move, and I think I'm in the minority here as far as Pistons followers and Pistons fans. Reggie Jackson is limited defensively. He's back. He's doing pretty well offensively. He looks to be in better form, but I've taken a close look at him defensively throughout the beginning of this season, and he just doesn't have it. And he hasn't had it throughout his career. If you add Eric Bledsoe and Avery Bradley and that backcourt together, throwing Stanley Johnson as another wing player there, I think that turns into a dynamic defensive team, a great defensive team. And I think that that's what Stan Van Gundy wants to build. And sure, Eric Bledsoe and Reggie Jackson offensively might be a little bit closer than maybe some people around the NBA, around the national landscape of fans might want to believe. I think Reggie Jackson gets shortchanged a little bit offensively, and I think that's maybe a pretty, you know, fair move for both sides offensively. But I think the increase in defense that Eric Bledsoe would bring would give the Pistons a nice improvement this year and going forward. Reggie Jackson's contract is also inflated. He's got 3 years left on the deal, and it's too big. He had an $80 million contract when he signed it a couple years ago. Eric Bledsoe, on the other hand, is cheaper and has one less year of responsibility on that contract. He'll be a free agent in 2 years. So, again, I think that it would have been a good move. And, of course, the first-round pick is the other thing to analyze in the move. The Pistons, as an organization, you have to hope that this year turns into a pretty good one, and your pick is no longer in the top part of the teens or, heaven forbid, the lower part of single digits. I think that if you're looking at your first-round pick for next year, you're kind of hoping that this is a pick in the 17, 18, 19, possibly even higher and farther away from the first pick range. So you're kind of betting on yourself when you're making a trade for Eric Bledsoe that you're going to turn into a playoff team, that pick's not going to be all that more valuable anyway. And then if you're paying attention to this roster, what does adding another Henry Ellenson type of asset to this roster, what good does that do anyway? Don't you have a logjam already? Don't you have... And this is not a team that has a lot of free agents coming off the board next year. You got Avery Bradley, who you hope to re-sign. And then after that, your core is all coming back next year unless you make a trade. So guys like Anthony Tolliver are kind of like the only free agents on the board this year. There's not like there's going to be a lot of minutes, a lot of spots in the rotation that are going to be opened up. I just don't see this first-round pick. Obviously, always a first-round pick is an asset, and it's valuable to some teams. But first of all, I just don't think that for the Pistons, it's going to be something that they're going to really want to utilize, especially given the fact that, you know, you don't think that this is going to be a very high pick and there's just not a lot of minutes available right now. And you already have a project like Henry Ellenson that you want to fit more minutes in. A guy like Luke Kennard is probably going to become that too. He's been inactive for 3 games on the West Coast trip. You're going to want to find minutes for him at that time too. So another bold prediction I have, if it isn't Eric Bledsoe or it isn't this deal in particular, I think that first-round pick for the Pistons gets moved. And I think if Stan Van Gundy is betting on himself and this team for this season, I think that it's going to get moved sooner rather than later. So, like I said, we've got Frank Madden coming up, and we're going to talk Milwaukee Bucks. But that's wanted to give my thoughts on the trade proposal and rumors going forward. I think that where there's smoke, there's fire. Maybe not this particular move at this particular time, but I think that's something might be coming down for the Pistons, and it could be sooner rather than later.
Yes, sir!
All right, we are joined now by Frank Madden, host of the Locked on Bucks podcast. We got the big game coming up Friday night at Little Caesars Arena between the Bucks and the Pistons. And there's just so many parallels between these teams. There's kind of intersecting parts with these teams being divisional foes. And it seems like with Giannis on the Bucks that they're going to be a team that's going to be a problem for the Pistons for years to come. So I wanted to bring Frank on and get the lowdown on the Bucks so that Pistons fans could kind of get familiar with this team coming to town. And they got some more games coming up in the next few weeks as well. But Frank, it looks like Giannis is making another leap at the beginning of the season this year, and possibly, you know, we're far down the line from talking about MVP and all that kind of stuff, but what's the difference with that guy this year? So many strides in the past years, but it seems like it's an even another level right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who has had a number of fast starts the last couple of years, but certainly the start he's had this year is beyond certainly what we saw in any of these previous years. And you know, I think last year, obviously, he kind of established himself as you know, kind of the next big thing, or at least alongside, you know, some of the other great young talents like the Anthony Davises and Karl Towns, as far as being one of those guys who down the road would challenge for, you know, being perhaps the best player in the league. And certainly this year, the way he started, I think a lot of people, you know, are already getting excited about the possibility that, you know, maybe he's there right now. And so we'll see. It's obviously a long season. You know, he had really his first bad shooting night of the year the other night in Charlotte. First time he scored fewer than 28 points, had foul trouble, just never got going, and finished with 14 and still had 13 boards, you know, 5 assists, 2 blocks, 2 steals. So still did other stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think the big thing with him, you know, he looks stronger than certainly in previous years. He's been listed at 222 the last couple of years. Told our, actually our my co-host Eric Name, asked him on media day about it, because we were actually discussing that he looks bigger. And he said he came into camp at about 238 and had probably dropped like 5 pounds from when camp started. But he certainly looks in that mid-230s range. And I think the big thing this year you're seeing is, you know, his isolation scoring has been off the charts, you know, going into the game the other day. And obviously it's dropped since then. But he was averaging almost 24 points per game in the paint, which, you know, going back the 20 years we have those stats, is the highest anybody's ever seen. And, you know, that includes the Shaq years in Orlando and LA. So, yeah, you know, in a league that obviously is going smaller and smaller, Giannis being long and strong and so, you know, capable of getting shots going to the basket. You know, some could say it's like unconventional given the league has become so much about shooting, but in a lot of ways, I think the way that teams' defenses are shifting actually is really playing into the way Giannis wants to play, which is obviously using that tremendous size and athleticism to go to the basket, where, you know, there's a lot fewer rim protectors than maybe there used to be. So, so yeah, seeing him really kind of use that strength now, especially in isolation, he was really an average scorer in isolation and in the post last year. But it started this year extremely well, doing that. And, it will be interesting to see how the Pistons defend him. You know, John Lure, I mean, we kind of joked about it, but John Lure actually has had a couple games where he's put in good minutes defending Giannis, using the fact that, you know, he's a pretty tall guy, but also has some foot speed to at least try to deny the ball from Giannis and at least, you know, make life a little bit more difficult for him. So we'll be interested to see. Obviously teams are kind of having to figure out different ways to defend him. And I think certainly that is also resulting in a lot more open looks for his Bucks teammates. So certainly his game continues to evolve, but you know, certainly early in the season, difficult to find much to complain about.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's probably nobody in the league that can really defend Giannis and shut him down, so to speak. But the Pistons had a lot of problems last week with Ben Simmons, who's kind of maybe the next version of Giannis, as such a long, versatile guy. And if the Pistons are going to get any good and beat some of these top teams, if they see the Bucks in the playoffs or something like that, they're going to have to learn to deal with some of these guys. So it'll be interesting to see the approach they took. They threw a bunch of guys at Ben Simmons last week, and Anthony Tolliver had the most success. So we'll be interesting to see how Stan handles Giannis. Again, it's not going to be one guy, and they're never going to shut him down. But you know, it's something to keep an eye on and how the strategy unfolds throughout the season and all these meetings. But Frank, I want to talk to you about some of this roster overlap that the teams have had over the last few years, starting with Chris Middleton, this trade a few years ago. Brandon Knight for Brandon Jennings was pretty much the headline, but a couple of throw-ins, and one of those throw-ins, a second-round pick from the Pistons, actually turned out to be Chris Middleton. What has happened with his career? He's, you know, a borderline all-star at this point, had 43 points, a career high the other day. How has he made that step, and what did the Pistons miss back then?
Yeah, it's interesting. I you know, when he first started to really, you know, develop as a player, and I think we saw some real nice progress from him in that first year after he came over. And then really the year after was when he kind of took that major leap to being a player that, you know, was clearly an above average starter, and obviously eventually gets a 5-year, $70 million contract, which at this point looks like a very, very good deal for the Bucks. But it's funny because, you know, you look at him on paper and, you know, I've heard talk that, well, you know, he had a knee injury in college and that's, you know, he would have been a first round pick, but then he had his knee injury his junior year. And then, you know, that hurt his stock. And it's kind of funny because it's like, you look at, especially his numbers and you look at the way he plays, you know, even now in college, I mean, he didn't shoot three pointers well in college. I think he was sub 30% his junior year. Again, might've been small sample injuries, stuff like that. He's not, you know, a dynamic ball handler. You don't look at him as a guy who's like a terror in the open court. And granted, I'm a little spoiled watching Giannis all the time, but, and he's obviously not like a plus athlete, right? I mean, he's not a guy who's jumping over guys. He's had a few dunks this year, which again is encouraging, especially after last year tearing his hamstring and, you know, looking certainly not up to his best late in the year when he came back. But, you know, I think it's just consistency, and he's just developed a very quietly just good overall game as far as, you know, obviously a career 40% shooter from three. The fact that he has developed that shot really in the NBA, you know, I don't know if folks in Detroit thought that was going to happen when they had him for the year. I don't think certainly I expected that to happen when they acquired him. There weren't really necessarily signs that he was going to become this extremely consistent 3-point shooter. And, you know, I think the big thing last couple of years has been he's got just a really subtle kind of pick and roll feel. You know, he's the kind of guy who doesn't make flashy passes, but every night you look at the box score and he's got 4 or 5 assists and, you know, picks up a couple steals. And, you know, even if he doesn't shoot well on a given night, and he's had a slow start shooting the ball, really that 43-point explosion was kind of the exception rather than the rule here early in the season. He's still shooting under 30% from three. So I'm certainly hoping that reverses course over time, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it's just hard work. And again, a guy who just has been very consistent, and, you know, he just reads the game extremely well on both ends. Just a really smart player who always seems to find the right spot on the floor. Still a guy, I think, who should shoot more threes and fewer long twos. I think that's probably my biggest complaint with him. We kind of talk about that every year, hoping he might turn some of those long twos into threes. But overall, obviously, especially as you mentioned, you know, how the Bucks acquired him in that trade, difficult not to feel anything but ecstatic with the quality of player that he's become. And, you know, I think the question obviously the Bucks is, you know, how good is he in kind of a pecking order for a contending team? And, you know, right now he's the number two on the Bucks, which probably is a bit, you know, ambitious for a guy like him. He's probably not good enough to be the number two on a real contending team, even if you have Giannis. So I think the question is, you know, how do you build around him and the rest of the Bucks, obviously Giannis being the centerpiece, but certainly with Chris, you know, he's able to play off of, you know, Giannis, he's able to play off of Jabari Parker. He's just a guy who fits with everybody. And you know, every year his plus minus on off stuff is tremendous. He's been a terrific RPM guy, you know, all these sort of peripheral advanced metrics love Chris Middleton. And I think that just speaks to the fact that, you know, he does all the subtle things correctly, even if he doesn't necessarily deliver the highlights.
Yeah. And another guy that was part of the Pistons rebuilding plan a few years ago and teamed with Andre Drummond inside for a couple years and then kind of a salary cap casualty moved on from him was Greg Monroe. Moose, how's he doing in Milwaukee? I know he's injured and not going to play this weekend, but what's kind of his status with the team right now and looking ahead to the future? I know the Bucks are still tinkering with pieces, like you said, trying to figure out that formula of a team that could possibly contend for the Eastern Conference champion someday soon. But where does Moose fit in, and what do you think about his kind of status and tenure with the team?
Yeah, I mean, he's had a really strange time in Milwaukee, to be honest. I mean, that first year coming in as you know, this huge free agent signing and so much expectation around what he could bring to a team that, you know, we were joking before we went on the air, you know, the Bucks felt like, you know, what the Pistons had last year, kind of going through that disappointment after the encouraging year, the season prior, it kind of felt like that the Bucks were at that point the year before when they would go out and sign Monroe and then they don't live up to expectations. And it seems like now the Bucks are kind of back in that spot where last year they kind of got back to where they were before. And now they're hoping to kind of take that next step again. And, you know, ironically, Monroe was a big disappointment his first year. You know, he put up numbers, really put up the same numbers, you know, it's really solid per minute numbers and started and, you know, kind of hard to look at him and say like, well, he was the problem. And you look what he did last year, you know, he accepted a bench role eventually. He probably wasn't thrilled about it early on, but, you know, really kind of embraced that role over time and was great for the Bucks. You know, with Middleton missing a large part of the year, with Jabari Parker missing, you know, the last third of the season or more with his second ACL tear. I mean, Greg was the Bucks' second most valuable player last year, and his steadiness off the bench, the fact that you could throw the ball down to him in the high post or the low post and have him go get buckets. You know, he's a guy that can make some nice passes. And I think he really improved his defense last year as well. I think that was a big part of obviously him improving. That was obviously always been a question mark with him, given his lack of athleticism and certainly the way the game is evolving. Wouldn't say that a guy like Monroe is going to become more relevant over time. But yeah, you can't really say enough about what he meant to this team last year. And it'll be interesting now. He's got the calf problem. He really struggled in the first few games of the season. Just didn't look up to his best that we saw last year. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think everybody's sort of assuming that he is not going to be a part of the long-term future, which is interesting because, I mean, he's not a guy that I think is going to get a big contract next summer. I think he's probably going to be a guy that, you know, signs like a 1+1 type deal somewhere for, you know, $6-8 million. And that's probably what he's going to get. And he's probably going to go make the best of it. But certainly if he can come back and, you know, kind of reestablish himself as a reliable scorer, efficient scorer down low, certainly for a Bucks team that still doesn't have a ton of creation outside of Giannis, a guy like him can definitely be valuable. But for now, I think it's actually kind of interesting seeing how this team copes without him, just because, again, you know, he's been rumored on the trade block basically from, you know, the All-Star break of his first year here ever since. And certainly, you know, with the talks about Eric Bledsoe potential move, things like that, you know, as a big expiring contract, he's an obvious guy that could be involved if the Bucks do try to make a bigger deal. So certainly interesting seeing the Bucks roll with John Henson and Thon Maker right now, because, you know, it's very possible that later this year or certainly next year, Moose could be gone and we're going to have to see how the Bucks, you know, kind of cope with the fact that none of those guys really bring any of the sort of low post scoring that Greg does. But, you know, he's been a pro, a guy that I think has been very well liked in the locker room. And, you know, I think it's been nice that he's been able to kind of turn that around, because certainly that first year was a tough one with the team struggling and, you know, with all the questions about how he fit into it. So I did not expect him to, you know, a couple of years ago, I figured, oh, things are going to go well and he'll opt out and get a big new contract from somebody. But obviously that didn't work out that way. And, you know, different league now than it was a couple of years ago. So we'll see what that means for Greg's future. But, you know, hopefully he can at least be another solid contributor this year for the Bucks.
There's actually more to that interview with Frank Madden that we'll share a little bit of a part two as the Pistons get ready to take on the Bucks in another week or so. They're heading up to Milwaukee to play at the Bradley Center in about 10 days. I'm planning on heading up to that game, but we've got more Bucks talk about the John Hammond connection, the John Horst connection, just about the front office and how these teams kind of meld together, and also what Frank thinks about the team's future for the Milwaukee Bucks for the near term and for the long term as well, as far as how they're going to do this season and what some of the front office, you know, machinations and upheaval and drama of the past year or so, what that could mean for the future of the franchise, a franchise that the Pistons and fans should really keep an eye on. Another bit of news that came out Thursday was that the Tom Gores, Dan Gilbert MLS bid has another powerful triumvirate involved, I guess we could say now, with the Fords joining, the Ford family, of course, the Ford Motor Company and the Detroit Lions. They are offering up Ford Field for the MLS bid to use as the stadium for the team instead of the proposed jail site on Gratiot Avenue in downtown. So a new part, a new look for the bid as it enters its 11th hour, basically. The MLS is going to be deciding and naming franchise bids in December for who's going to get it. To me, it sounds like if you're switching your stadium which is pretty much the centerpiece of your proposal. That doesn't sound good for what in the chances of a bid happening, which is coming in about a month. And it sounds like the MLS officials hadn't really come to their site visit as of the past month or so. And I know that the Gores and Gilbert people are staying pretty tight-lipped about that, but the lack of news coming out about that, and now this with the Fords kind of jumping on, I don't think that that sounds like a good thing if you're hoping for an MLS team to come to Detroit. Now, however, maybe this is the thing that saved the bid, and maybe this is what MLS kind of asked for, and maybe this is what they're kind of promising just to help their chances. So there's kind of two ways of looking at it, but maybe call me negative, but I think that that might be a bad sign for how that bid is going. But big weekend of Pistons basketball, home for the Milwaukee Bucks on Friday night tonight, home for the Sacramento Kings on Saturday night as well. And then the homestand continues with Indiana and Miami and Atlanta next week. So a lot of Pistons basketball in downtown Detroit. Go out to the game if you get a chance sometime in the next week or so. And follow me on Twitter at @Matt_Schuch, S-C-H-O-C-H, and then another underscore after that. I'll have thoughts on the games throughout the weekend. And then we'll be back here with a podcast on Monday morning to wrap it up and talk about the rest of the homestand ahead. So thanks for joining me and have a great weekend, everyone.